Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now on with Monkey Tennis.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello friends, just a quick note before this week's episode to remind you about Monkey Tennis Live. As you should know by now, it's happening at the Prince Charles Cinema in London's Leicester Square on Thursday, November the 24th. We're pleased and amazed that half the tickets have already gone, so if you're thinking of joining us as we dissect and celebrate Alpha Papa live, then make sure you get your tickets quickly. They're at postpoppodcasts.com/monkeytennis. That's also the place to go to pick up our limited edition t-shirt, which by the time you hear this will only be on sale for another 2 weeks, so head along and pick it up while you can. Finally, we wanted to apologise. A couple of weeks ago, we mixed up our Die Hard references, as many of you have been in touch to tell us. Obviously, it was Bill Clay and not Bill Carr. We will never make a mistake like that again. So just to reiterate, that's right, it was Bill Clay. That's the name that Jack Nicholson's character Hannibal Gruber gives in the popular science fiction movie set on Father's Day, Dies Hard.
What's the burning issue? At Dante Fires, sponsors of this episode of Monkey Tennis, it's the question we ask every day. That's how we've become the Ferrari of the coal effect gas fireplace industry. End your day with a puff flash bang, courtesy of our top range of fireplaces.
Monkey Tennis?
Done!
Monkey Tennis?
Little piece my foot on this thing.
Monkey Tennis?
Go to London, I guarantee you'll either be mugged or not appreciated.
Monkey Tennis?
Done!
Monkey Tennis?
On the whole, a very good effort, 7 on 10.
It's hotter than the sun!
Back of the net.
Monkey Tennis?
Hello and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the podcast with our faces on one side and Alan Partridge's on the other. We've got a puff flash bang of an episode for you as we look at The Colour of Alan, episode 2 of series 2 of I'm Alan Partridge. I'm Adam Brooks and with me is Tom Dark.
Oh, I sat on the bastard.
Nick Older.
Spice World.
And Tom Stab.
Pyrotechnics.
So, this is the description of this episode from the DVD sleeve. Alan really is on the up. He's been asked to organise a sales conference for Dante's of Reading, the Ferrari of the coal effect fire industry. However, following a nasty incident at his local country club, Choristers, the day of the presentation doesn't exactly go to plan. So,
I'm laughing thinking about what's coming up.
Can I just say I do love this episode.
Yeah, that's great.
It has a special place in my heart, not only because it's good, but because I was in the audience for the recording of this one.
I thought you were in the last one.
They did bits of a few episodes.
Are you suggesting that Adam's telling porky pies, Nick?
I would never. So some facts about that. It was filmed at the old BBC TV Centre in Wood Lane.
The old BBC.
The sets that they had, they had the inside of his house, the caravan, the interior of Coristers and the petrol station were all sets on stage. Yeah, it was all done in front of a live audience. Even the pre-recorded bits were screened for the audience's benefit, and it was all shown in sequence to make sense. I went along with my old uni friend, Partridge enthusiast and friend of the show, Lee Debbidge. While we were there,
is that the Lee Debbidge that I know?
Yes, it is.
Oh. Hello, Lee Debbidge.
Friends in common. We tried to do distinct laughs while we were in the audience so that we would turn up on the laughter track, but it didn't work out. Lee's mum claims to this day that she can hear us, but she can't. There are also very few outtakes. Almost all of the scenes we saw, they did a few extra takes for safety, but they largely nailed it first time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Consummate and, professionals.
Steve came out in character as Alan beforehand to... introduce us and say thanks for coming to the reenactment of some key scenes from his life.
Brilliant. Nice touch. That's great.
Yeah.
Was it just a thing you applied for online or something?
It was
to
just
get tickets. Or?
Yeah, it was just mashing the keyboard of our PCs on the BBC audience website. I think something like that. Lee sorted it out.
Cool.
Yeah. So we open at Radio Norwich. Always the same.
Always the same.
Yep.
We discover that Alan's slot runs till midnight, and Dave Clifton's got the slot midnight to 4 a.m. The musical cue is The Police, or as they're now known, Sting.
Who is better?
Well, I was going to say,
is The Police, or as he's now known, not they're now known?
Well, why would they The Police, the or as he's now known?
That's the gag, because he thought that Sting was called The Police. He thought it was one person.
Is that the gag?
Is that the gag?
Yes.
I think we need to refer to the script on that.
Yeah, I am referring to the script. Yeah. I have it in front of me here.
Interesting. But the script's not going to say... P.S. The joke is this.
Yeah, but the point is, the script is he's now known, not they.
Interesting.
He, not they.
Okay.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Great. Getting a thumbs up from producer Jed here.
I was going to say, The Police versus Sting, is it fair to say they're on level pegging? Can you name another member of The Police?
The guitarist is called Dave?
What?
No.
Gary Police?
No. Gary Police.
I can't.
Well, in that case,
terrible.
It's fair enough to say that The Police is basically Sting. Is that fair?
Yeah, but I would say Sting is better because I just love Fields of Gold.
He says they're now known.
Eat
every
it,
Freddy word.
In that case, the script on the internet is wrong, but Jed still agrees with me, so...
Sure, okay. Well, it's been...
He's still giving me a thumbs up.
It's been a fun diversion. There's another bit of... those of you who listened to last week's episode, I was talking about Alan being the original Jemble. There's a bit more Jemble talk this time. 23
You're
years...
You're obsessed, Adam. You're obsessed.
23 years on the game may not render her pleasurable to mine eye. And he's talking about Roxanne, the now aged prostitute of the Sting, The Police song.
How old would she be now? Let's not bother going down that road.
Question to the group. Has anyone played the Roxanne...
I thought you were going to say, has anyone slept with a prostitute?
Nick, is there anything you'd like to tell us now?
Let's move on.
Okay. No, has anyone played the Roxanne drinking game before?
Yes, with you, I
Yeah, think, with you it? About 100 million times.
Was this when you guys lived together again?
Yeah. No, it's great though, isn't it? It really is good fun.
Yeah, sounds it.
You should explain the rules.
I will briefly explain the rules. So you're having some kind of house party or get together. You split the room into two groups. One room drinks on the word Roxanne. One group drinks on the words red light every time they're heard in the song. And you might think, oh, that's fine. That sounds doable. But if you listen to the song, you realise... there's a lot of consumption and it's happening very fast.
It speeds up as it goes along, doesn't it? Yeah. Step one, drink when they say Roxanne, or step two, drink when they say
red
the
light.
Other thing. Step three, everybody dies.
Yeah, that is the result.
Yep. So there's a caller. It's Roy from Bungie.
Bungie. Now, Roy is actually voiced by Simon Greenall.
Which I didn't realise immediately.
And I have done some research into Bungie because I thought it's an interesting place name. There's got to be something interesting about it. Turns out it's not that interesting, but I can link Bungie to the darkness. So.
What, the
yeah,
band?
Yeah, probably.
Band? Go on.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
So.
Do you need to?
Well, no, but I mean.
Let's move on
then.
So. So Alan's making notes instead of engaging the caller.
Oh, fuck off! Is...
What's the darkness got to do with anything?
Well, I'll just... It's the one interesting thing I can tell you about it. So Bungay, small town in Suffolk, East Anglia, approximately 16 miles southeast of Norwich. There's a church there, St Mary's Church, which was struck by lightning. During the thunderstorm, an apparition appeared consisting of a black hellhound which dashed around the church, attacking members of the congregation. It then suddenly disappeared and reappeared in the Holy Trinity Church, Blythburgh, 12 miles away, injuring members of the congregation there. This dog is claimed to be Black Shook, a dog haunting the coast of Norfolk, Essex and Suffolk. That is also a song by The Darkness, and the song is written about that.
So Alan's making... Sorry about
We're
that.
We're adding extra value. This is what the people want.
It's not. Is this what the people want? Email us. thepartridgepod@gmail.com.
I mean, let's not put this to the public vote in any way.
Let's not let the public hear it.
So Alan's making notes instead of engaging the caller, something that other fellow professional broadcaster Danny Baker would never do.
I feel like as well, while he's doing that, on, well, say on paper, but this feature kind of should be brilliant.
Alan's funny stories.
Yeah, Alan's funny stories. Why would that not be great? People phoning in with hilariously funny stories, it should just work.
I think it's dependent on the quality of the callers, though, isn't it? And obviously he's only getting mentals calling in.
I think the smaller the radio station, the less you can screen through the bad calls. I think he's under pressure to take every call that comes in.
Everyone's making it to air.
Yeah. The phone line is very much still open and available if you want to call in. not us, I mean.
Don't call us.
So that story ends, Wonder Who Got the Power Pack, with 16 seconds still to fill before the news comes
so
in.
So good. I remember when this first aired, being at university at the time, and crying with laughter at this scene. I absolutely loved it. And I still do. It's really great.
After the
news,
after the credits, his one-liner is, "How can you set fire to your hands?"
Good question. Yeah, good question.
I wondered who do you think he's talking to in these little post-credits one sentence.
And you could say you could put your hands on fire.
Yeah,
yeah.
I imagine it's Lynn that he's speaking to. But
well, much like the first episode where we drew chalk penises on our back, we're going to try and set our hands on fire.
Yeah. So Nick's up first. Off you go.
Very good.
So then we're in his to-be-constructed house. He's so proud that he's remembered Carl the Builder's name. He's very happy. Yeah.
He hasn't remembered... Doesn't Lynn prompt him, though?
Oh, yes, that's right.
Lynn hasn't remembered it. Lynn kind of whispers in his ear, Carl. Yeah. Hello, and then, Carl.
And then he goes along to the next one. She's like, John.
Yeah.
Right, Alan.
He doesn't have a clue, although it's kind of signposted, I think, in a later episode that Alan has seen Lynn talking to the builders. Mm. Not that there's anything going on, but I think Lynn's probably got a better relationship with him than Alan does.
Yeah, I
wouldn't doubt that for a moment.
It's also interesting that he seems willing to give up embarrassing information about himself and to basically be self-deprecating, but only to people who he thinks are lower status. So
they don't want to see me.
Exactly. Talking to the builders, he's happy to admit that he's got access to the kids, but they don't want to see him. He was happy to say that he'd been physically repellent to women for 2 years, but it's obviously info that he'd be mortified if Tony Hares back in series one had known that sort of thing, or if the Meteor Films woman had found it out. He's still angry at Lynn about talking to Meteor Films about his panic attacks. Yeah, he's quite happily discussing it with the builders. Quite interesting. John has got very short shorts on.
He's got really short shorts on.
Speaking to Nick, that was the voice of Nick, our resident short shorts expert.
I just love short shorts. And I think that, to be fair to John, I mean, I don't know how old John is, but he kind of has the look of someone that's quite old, but the physique of a...
He looks after himself.
He's got a bit of an expat vibe about him, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Sort of perma-tanned, bleached short hair.
Well,
I can
depart a bit of information here. So he, for the filming of this series...
Does this tie back to The Darkness?
No, we've done that now.
Okay,
we've
good,
done.
Good.
I mean, I can try and find a link, but...
Join us for Tom Trek Into Darkness. Tom Dark Special.
I mean,
Darkness Booker.
I don't want to do that.
That's a great pun.
He was fake tanned for the series, unsurprisingly, but also he's wearing a blonde hairpiece as well.
Oh,
so
really?
the tuft of blonde hair you see underneath his hat all the time. And in the commentary on this episode, the writers refer to this character as being muscly and tanned, which is confusing. So I think I'm assuming what they mean there is it's a bit sexually confusing for Alan.
Oh, interesting.
Really?
Mm. Well, that's blown all my Alan theories wide open.
I think there's always an interesting thing with Alan and his kind of views on kind of other men and homosexuality and stuff, is he a little bit intrigued? You know,
I don't think so.
There's certainly,
I think he sees
Bangkok
it as
chick boys.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. I don't know his relationship with Glenn Ponder.
I think he sees it as sort of like mystical. You know, like it's he doesn't quite. It's like he still thinks of it as quite an exotic thing to be gay, and it's a bit. Yeah. It's a bit the way that he treats it is like it's, you know, discovering a new species.
I mean, he wants to know about the ladyboys immediately when he's talking to Michael.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. A bit of regional racism from his as well, because John is from slightly further north than Alan. Yep. I've also got a note here that he's not in control in his own house. He's very much in sort of tiptoeing around the builders a bit.
Oh yeah, but I think is that just because he's scared of them because physically they are bigger and stronger than him as well.
Bigger boys.
Yeah. You have Lynn and Michael having a bit of a face-off over smoking in this scene as
That's the first time we've seen Michael smoke as well.
Yeah, and you...
And the only time, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But remember, a monkey had eaten all of his fags before, so we do know that he's a smoker.
Yeah, that's true.
Good point.
But I think this is all implied throughout the first series as well. Lynn and Michael do not get on at all.
No.
And the cast agreed on that, saying that if Lynn and Michael were in a lift together, they wouldn't talk.
Absolutely.
It's that steadfast.
Also, did Lynn and Michael ever meet in Series 1?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
they were
in a hotel together.
Yeah, but
in a hotel.
Name a scene where they're both in it speaking to one another.
Speaking directly to each other.
Yeah.
Rather than just being in the same
I think
that's
building.
The whole thing, though. I think they know each other. They don't like each other. They don't bother to engage.
Right. But I was racking my brains in the whole series.
I can think of a scene where in the same.
Yeah. They're definitely in the same scenes hotel, together. But I think in terms of those two having a conversation together, that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Is there a theory that they're both the same person?
Would you like to talk us through that?
Well, it's a top line theory, and that's how I'm going to keep it.
It needs further development. I mean, I guess is it maybe that part of the reason they don't really get on is that they're the right hand man and right hand woman for Alan, so they're both kind of competing for his
definitely
attention or friendship.
I think he's cracked it. Yep.
Yeah.
He's talking a little bit about his potential meeting with Dantes of Reading, the Ferrari of the coal effect fire industry. That obviously is a reference to Dante, the Italian writer and thinker. One of his most well-known works is Inferno, hence the fire connection.
This is very good.
But Inferno in Dante's writing actually refers to hell. So if you follow that to the letter, you wouldn't want to name your company after it.
Also, a nightclub in Clapham.
What, hell? That also works.
Speaking of places you wouldn't want to go. Yeah.
One-way ticket to hell and back. Yeah. Another.
He's got it back to the darkness. There it is. Yeah. He's done it.
Very
he's
good. Done
it. Oh,
but not again.
There's the bell.
Yeah. He describes his sort of house renovations as a can-do go situation. Where he is replacing D's for T's, just like he told Dave Clifton off for in Series 1.
Oh, yeah. Smart.
Cheeky. There's another allusion to Michael's issues as well. Last episode,
so many issues.
Yeah, last episode, he was told he can't. He's been told he can't hit customers, and now his front door's been torn off. He told Alan it was stolen, but was it? I don't know.
We'll never know. You get Michael with another army phrase here, like the move and fire in Series 1. But this one is kill, kill, stab, twist, kill,
which gets that a massive well-known, laugh. That well-known military audience. Catchphrase. Michael's bike is Desert Storm.
That's my bike.
Yeah, and it's got a homemade danger, hand-painted signs of danger.
Because it is very dangerous. Yeah. More Michael information at this point. An early version of the plot of this series saw that Michael, in this scene, because he's got that big bag with him, that he was carrying his greyhound dog around in that bag. I don't know why they abandoned that idea.
That's brilliant.
And I also learned that the alleyway between the house and the static home is actually an indoor studio, whereas the caravan was apparently a real caravan.
Yes, that's right. I saw that being filmed live.
Right.
Yeah.
Which,
with Lee Dibbage.
With Lee Dibbage.
Lee who?
Cabbage.
So
never heard of him.
So, in Series 1, we talked about the best unintentional put-down where Alan says, oh, you don't need beauty sleep. Well, 40 winks. I would also say in this series, the best unintentional put-down is probably me next.
Yep.
as Michael is about to enter and Alan sees an opportunity to just put Michael in his place slightly.
I read that. Is that not he's trying to get between Lynn and Michael to make sure they basically don't come to fisticuffs?
No, I think he's just trying to re-establish order that he is above.
Yeah, that he should enter before Michael.
But why would he let Lynn go first?
That, he probably missed that. Lynette kind of just walked in.
She's
it happened.
Too far ahead to stop.
He couldn't pull her back.
Because later on, he does swerve. In another episode, he does swerve in front of her to go out
Which
first.
Is a classic Alan move.
Yeah.
I don't know. I still think it's more... He's a bit worried that if those two get into the static home before him, there's going to be another argument or some kind of fight.
I don't think so. But.
Well, admittedly, there is a bit... is it earlier in this episode where he's like, ding, ding, round out, round one, or whatever, he has to kind of separate them a little bit. So he is aware that there is a tension
Lynn.
There.
Yeah.
Batty you.
Yeah.
Batty you.
Would Michael hit Lynn? I don't think so.
No.
I think he would.
I think not intentionally, but I think he could snap.
I think a moment of madness.
He probably has hit men. I don't think he's hit women. I'm prepared to give him the benefit.
He's unpredictable.
Yeah.
He is unpredictable.
Before we move on to the next scene, as we were discussing in last week's episode, these short phrases or kind of one-word punchlines, in that's the scene where he's in the House of the Builders, you have Spice World, and when he sees the Desert Storm bike, Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
And again, I just feel like particularly both of those are really good examples where you just go, why would he say that? Why would he say Mary Poppins and Spice World? I just don't... I think they seem a bit
I think
out
the Mary Poppins
almost.
One works. I think Spice World is a bit... I think
I'd say the other way
yeah,
around.
Yeah, I think Mary Poppins works.
I think Mary Poppins works. Because it's sort of like a ruddy hell.
Yeah, exactly.
Mary Poppins.
Yeah, but then why not just say ruddy hell? So I think they're kind of drawing in... Not an obscure reference, but they're drawing in a reference to act as the punchline where... Normally, that would just be him saying something like "ruddy."
Yeah,
hell
but people
or,
say
or
things like
"Jimmy
Cricket" and stuff
yeah,
like that.
I think it's Spice like World is very much in the vein of Jurassic Park, whereas that is much more of a kind of exclamation of "Oh, I can't believe that's there." Mary
and you'd
Poppins.
Say Mary Poppins.
Well, no, I wouldn't.
I'm not having it.
People did say, you know, Jiminy Cricket and Jumpin' Josephat and all these sort of oldie worldy.
When's the last time you said Jumpin' Joseph, Adam?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Is that like a gimbal or whatever you're calling it?
Oh, God.
It's not of my generation.
You won't stop talking about it.
It's not of my generation, but I'm not a 50-year-old man, so...
What was it like for you then,
Tom? It's natural language.
Yay! Classic gags. No.
Yay! So
let's move on.
We're in the static caravan. Sonia's mugs are out. I love Sonia's mugs.
That sounds like a bit of a
Do you want to rephrase that?
Sorry, no. What I meant was I love Sonia's mugs.
Why?
Yeah. Also, Lynn's just because her idea of a gift is they're so awful. The way she's cut around Alan and Sonia's heads.
Whoa! Why are these gifts awful? One member of the team has been given a mug like this as a genuine gift.
Yes, but only because this happened in the program.
Well, of course.
How can you be sure?
What I'm going to do is I'm going to post a picture on the socials. My girlfriend Abby has given me.
Sorry, Tom. Girlfriend,
fiance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right. gave me a mug which, like Alan, has a picture of me on one side and a cat on the other.
It's a great mug.
Post it on the socials.
Lovely mug.
Look at the cat. He's brilliant.
So Alan's talking to Lynn in sort of conspiracy type way about these mugs, and Lynn is baffled, kind of like when he was talking about his worry of getting assassinated in series one. She's like, it defies sense. Why? Now referring to the mugs, she's going, what does it mean? As if it's some sort of threat or code rather than she just made a mug.
And also Alan does say, I think she's planning something much worse.
It's basically talking about these mugs in the same terms as a terrorist atrocity.
She's talking about selling this stuff down at the covered market.
That's right. Yeah. And if you keep an eye out throughout this episode, in pretty much almost every scene from now on, there is a Sonia creation lurking in the background, whether it's a lampshade or a cushion.
And it's things I didn't notice a lot of that detail until rewatching recently. But also because in the static home behind them, all the pots and jars have Sonia and Alan's faces on. But you can see that they're actually just bits... just stuck on bits of card, so they're not kind of printed, so it's not like the mug where it's a properly printed photo on it. So I don't know whether that's poor production values from the TV show's part or that is just how Sonya's made them,
cobbled together props.
Would you have Alan's pasta gravy sauce? Also, who calls it pasta gravy? I'd call it like just pasta sauce.
I think that's the joke, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Again, Nick,
no,
that's the joke.
No, I think there's two potential jokes, and I don't know which one it is. Is it that...
Could go either way.
Is it that he thinks pasta sauce is referred to as pasta gravy sauce, or is his prototype a mixture of pasta sauce and gravy?
I think that's it. I think it's just Alan getting it wrong.
Right.
Now Nick's
That would
on
explain
board.
Why it's been turned down.
Exactly.
I think that's hilarious, but fine.
Okay.
Yeah, the only reference to pasta gravy sauce, well, the top reference on Google to pasta gravy sauce is gravy pasta if you're poor student recipes. which suggests combining the two to make them go further.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds awful.
Lynn pops on her giant headphones at this point, which is a great headphones gag.
Yeah. Yep. Of course she loves Poirot. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
And the face she's pulling while she's watching TV is incredible.
Grimacing, deep concentration. We find out that Sonia and Alan are having sex twice a day.
On the banquette. Now, I thought the banquette was a kind of sexy sofa, but a banquette is actually a type of sofa.
Oh, I thought he was doing like a portmanteau kind of...
No, I think it was a
banquette. Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah, no, Google it just to check I'm not wrong.
I will.
But, yeah.
You can see quite clearly as well, this is when Alan and Michael are talking about various types of sex. Michael was pretending to grab what we hope is a human by its hair. But if you look carefully, Michael Greenall almost corpses when he's miming doggy style.
Michael Greenall?
No, sorry, Simon Greenall, you know what I mean.
But also, it's obviously kind of intentional, but Michael's default sex position is to be quite aggressive. Yeah. It's not very, like, romantic or pleasurable.
He's not making love, is he?
No, it's quite aggressive, and he is hair-grabbing.
Yeah. A bit of milder homophobia from Alan, and he's like, oh, that could be Brian May. Oh, no, that's the other one, God rest his soul.
Rewatching that, I did think, oh, that is a bit much.
Yeah,
it's funny though.
Also, I did think if you could sum Alan up in one fact, it's that he knows Brian May's name but not Freddie Mercury's. That tells you a lot, I think. Michael slates himself now by when Alan's talking about the lax security at Choristers and says they'll let someone like you funny. In. And Michael says that's ridiculous. Recognizing
and then
that
Alan follows up with, "I know, I'm the person who stole your front door."
Meanwhile, Sonia's off talking to the builders about snappy snaps, get a cushion.
Whoa. That's English for stop a horse.
Sitting in his face.
Her head looks like Princess Di when it's on the scatter cushion. They even say that in a commentary, I think, to a later episode. Sonia's cut-out head on the scatter cushion looks like Princess Di. I think Felicity Montague mentioned that perhaps that's just because Diana also appeared on a lot of scatter cushions and mugs.
Sonia, the Princess of Hearts.
Yep.
Do we think the builders have been spying on them, Sonia and Alan?
No, it's just a joke, isn't it? Well, where they accuse... They say Alan can sit on his face.
And it's a very filthy joke at that.
Yeah. And I love how he absolutely sides with the builders over something. Apologising to them.
Sorry about that.
He's then back at Choristers riding roughshod over the security. Hi, I'm a communist with a gun. I hate you lot.
Just throwing the royal family out of a plane. Can I use your toilet?
And then when they let him in, describing him as utter nutters.
This scene when he's entering Choristers is a return of the classic Alan Partridge blazer as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's the first time we see it in this series.
Presumably a lot of unsold merchandise still in his storage.
Yeah, well, I'd imagine Alan's just got the one green blazer. That's probably... It's his signature look. Mm-hmm. Also, bonus fact here about Choristers, the gate that he goes through, that is fake, and they put that in. So the brick pillar, if you look closely, that is fake, and it's made of cardboard. If you go back and look, you actually can tell. So... if you're listening to this, we've just ruined that bit of a realism for you there.
Sorry.
That's what we're here to do.
For anyone who thought it was a documentary, we've blown your mind.
It really isn't.
So I think at this point he's now at the train station.
Desperately trying
to sell copies of his book. I noticed that his main selling point is that it's size. It fits into an attaché case. Also noticed
or the thigh pocket of a pair of fashionable combat trousers.
That's right.
Were combat trousers ever fashionable though?
To Alan,
in 2002, I think yes as well.
No.
Nick, you're living in a world where shell suits and cardigans and polo necks have all been fashionable at some point or another.
Also, you like pop punk. There's no way you didn't have massive, overblown shorts that had huge pockets.
Nick, I put this to you. This is 2002. We're at university. Combat trousers were a thing.
Yep.
And I wasn't wearing them.
It wasn't a thing.
A wallet on a chain.
You're wearing short
Dickies
shorts.
T-shirt.
It doesn't mean that sort of thing.
I definitely had a chain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a Dickies big baggy t-shirt. Trousers that didn't fit. In fact, none of my clothes fit. No, then they do.
And now they're all too small. He's gone the other way.
A couple of things about the backdrop of Alan's sales area at the station. The logo for his military quiz show Skirmish is a clear ripoff of the Sega logo.
Really?
Yeah. I've noticed. He's offering a free torch with every book, but they've
a Danko nightstick.
Yep, but they've had to put up a note saying torches will not be sold separately, presumably because people have asked if they can just leave the book and just have a torch. He also selling the Danko nightstick topic as having been used in futuristic TV series The X-Files. Firstly, The X-Files is set in present day, so it's not futuristic. Also, there's no way those are the flashlights that they used. And finally, a short plug for another post-pop podcast. If you like The X-Files, why not try X-Rated? The X-Files podcast, also available from post-pop, the people behind Monkey Tennis.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't bother, but it is there.
Nobody's listening to Alan's pronouncements, which makes it quite like when he was hosting the Swatham County Fair in Series 1.
Yeah, just using him as an information point, effectively.
Yep.
And he's happy to answer those questions.
He is. Oh, yeah, yeah, he's directing people to the right platform.
Do run.
We'll miss it. He's trying to slate people on their way to London, and so go to London, you'll either be mugged or not appreciated. Question for the group, as we all currently live or have lived in London for a period of time, just going around one by one. Have you been A, mugged, or B, not appreciated? Tom Dark?
I have never been mugged, but I'll go with not appreciated.
Yeah, I'd go with that as well.
Yes to both.
Okay, yeah, me too. I've been mugged at gunpoint and also not appreciated.
Oh yeah, remember your gunpoint saga?
Catch a train to London, stopping at Rejection, Disappointment, Backstabbing Central and Shattered Dreams Partway.
I got mugged for my... what's the PlayStation handheld thing?
PSP.
PSP. I got mugged for that and I was drunk on the way home from the tube and after they did that, I clearly noticed. I then offered them my Monster Munchin if they wanted any and they said no and ran off.
A polite mugging, really.
Yeah. I think around this point we're introduced to Pete Morant from Dante Fires.
See, I always thought that it was Pete, as in P-E-T-E, but it's not.
P-I-E-T.
No, P-I-E-T.
South African.
Yes, yes.
Played by Steve Brody, who we've probably all seen most recently in This Is England, the TV series.
He was in the full set of This. He was in 90, 88 and 86.
He was.
Yeah.
He's also been in Life's Too Short, Extras, Coupling, one of our favourite sitcoms there. Yes. I was waiting for Stab to swear like last time. Huh? He's also...
Oh, fuck off!
There we go. There it is. He's also been in The Office and The Bill and the Armando Iannucci shows playing his barber.
To be fair, it's a bit of a decent track record.
Let's
that,
not forget his first and most important role, where he played a part in It's Ulrika, the TV movie about Ulrika Johnson.
Oh, I must have read that and forgotten all about
it. It's Ulrika?
Do you not remember that?
No.
It was a sort of satirical film about Ulrika Johnson, I think, off the back of her being on Shooting Stars, I believe.
Hmm. Who did he play in The Office as well?
He was an agent. In the extra special, he was an estate agent.
Yes. Well. No, he was Brent's agent.
That's
wow,
right.
Just looking up.
I
can confirm that It's Ulrika is a real thing. It's released in 1997 and has a 3.3 out of 10 rating on IMDb.
We will watch the trailer later.
The rating speaks for itself.
Written by Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer as well.
No.
Yeah. It was.
It's a Shooting Stars spin-off, I assume. Yeah.
Alan asks Pete, what part of Birmingham are you from? That's a silly line.
I thought it was quite funny.
Clearly a South African accent.
Yeah, but it's quite good because Alan just not really understanding things. I like that. But actually, question to the group. Do we think Pete is doing a good South African accent? Is it believable or not?
I think he is doing a South African accent like Sonia's doing a Ukrainian accent.
Exactly. Yeah,
with a hint of exaggeration.
I feel it's a little bit OTT. Bit of extra info on this scene. So this scene in Norwich Station was the first day of filming for Series 2 of Alan Man and Partridge. So that meant it was the first time in 5 years that Coogan played Alan.
Wow. There you go.
Fact punch.
Nice. Straight in the chops.
And then it's on to Corrin. From here, I believe.
Yes, where he's booked a room under the name The Real IRA, trying to point holes out in Chorister's safety protocols, but he opens the door and it's full of cops.
And that's a great kind of, it's a brilliant setup and payoff for that. The fact you've got the kind of, you've got the line which is, I'm an arsonist with the big box of matches, please can I come in, set fire to the staff, and then you've got the visual gag of the police being behind the door and he hasn't realised. Mm-hmm. It's great.
So he's got to go back to the static caravan. Oh no, they go for a... What did they go? They have to kill
lunch.
A pub lunch for an hour while he sets up...
he clearly... I think this bit's a bit... Not weird, but... I don't know.
Are you going down the same route that I was going to go, which is like, I'm slightly... Like, Alan's a bit embarrassed about the fact that he's doing it all. I don't get
think this bit's a bit strange.
I just don't really get the fact that he's doing
all the stuff back at the house.
Why back at the house,
back at the house. But he could just do that in the pub.
But surely he would just say to him, look, my house is being built, I'm working in a static caravan at the moment.
But I think isn't he trying to give the impression that he's got kind of a big office and staff,
premises,
and it's like he's trying to make it look
from, though?
That's obviously what he is trying to do, but I just think it's odd, and they could just discuss business. Because they've gone to the choristers to discuss business. Why couldn't they just do that in the
pub? I just think the whole thing doesn't sit quite right.
And he does tee up the start of the scene, because he says, it's a bit of a building site. So it's not like he's trying to hide the fact the house is still being built, but yeah, why he's pretending this is like an office in a boardroom table.
Yeah.
But then I guess the whole thing is, that's what they build all the jokes around. So
yeah. That said, I'm glad he did it, because you get to see Michael's imitation of a sort of polite person.
Yes. Hello. Yes. How that's
do
good.
You do? Michael, who is, according to Alan, in charge of our internet computer, as opposed to the other kinds. There's near porn on it.
And you know that it's riddled with porn as well.
Because yeah, that's the first thing he says.
Yeah.
It's got viruses and spyware up the wazoo, hasn't it?
Yeah. Boob Olympics was the last thing they looked at before Titsnade Zoo.
Alan gets mangled by saying you need a hat hard on. No, sorry, I mean hat hard on. Yep. And he's got clocks. We actually guessed in series one, I think, that he would have clocks to, what is it, London, New York, and Norwich. But it's London, Paris, and Dublin, two of which are on the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same as London, but I do think sometimes you need to be reminded of that.
Yeah. Also noticed that the fruit bowl on the table, in inverted commas, has alternating Alan and Sonia faces on it.
And I had not noticed that until rewatching recently.
Brilliant.
Yep.
Great detail.
His reaction to falling off the sofa is priceless as well. A little bit of slapstick where he just...
Well, yeah, I mean, it is very funny. I do like it, and I do like this episode a lot, but there are those sort of moments where it feels a lot more slapstick than series one.
Yeah.
And sometimes that feels a bit out of step with how series one was.
Yeah.
With this series being more like a straightforward sitcom than...
Yeah, it definitely is. Because I think you have... There's almost like... With series one, with it all being based around a hotel, and he's kind of like, he's not in a good place. There's this kind of classic kind of British sitcom thing where actually it's quite dark underneath the surface, whereas this one is all a bit more slapstick and a bit more light-hearted surface level, perhaps.
This does hark back to a much earlier era of comedy, this scene, doesn't it? Because it's
simpler times.
Well, it reminds me of like the Breakfast sketch, like, and like Morecambe and Wise and things like very much like the
physical comedy of it.
Yeah. Yeah,
but then you do get some very, you know, some brilliant Alan noises, which is him sort of laughing as he gets up from falling off the sofa, and then also the as they're trying to balance the whole thing. It's great.
That's the thing. I did feel like, even watching this the first time it ever aired, being a bit like, oh, this feels a bit too light and slapstick, but then going, but it is bloody funny, so it's fine.
Yeah.
There's a printout of Lynn on the wall, and I don't know why.
No, see, first watching this again recently, I hadn't noticed that, and I was like, who is that? Oh my god, that's Lynn. And it's actually Lynn in front of a Christmas tree. Now, I can't add much more to this, but according to director's commentary, that was associated with another plot line that didn't make it to the episode.
Right.
That's all I have. That's all they said about it, so I don't know what
happened. You'll have to invent the fun in your own minds.
Yes, yeah, Lynn doing something for Christmas.
Yep. The lights aren't good enough, so Lynn has to go nuclear, basically putting the lights on the Lexus.
Yeah. The hazards.
Alan another thing he does a lot in the series, attempting to do somebody's accent to them in an offensive way. He does it to the builders, he's now doing it to Pete. Full beam, etc.
Tomato.
Yep. And then you get one of the more memorable bits of the episode where Pete appears to be saying something that he isn't actually saying. He's like, Alan, you can't!
Didn't get this for years. I didn't get that joke.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know why, but...
Bloody hell.
I wondered, for those of you that have been studying the script, what's the word written down in the script?
Ooh, okay, talk amongst yourselves.
Is it full C word, or is it just
well,
can't?
Well, as we learned from earlier, I've been going off a script on the internet, which seems to be not 100% accurate, so...
I wondered if there's nothing on the commentary to suggest...
The discussion they had with Pete was about whether he should pronounce it more as... can't or cunt, basically.
Okay. It is can't in the script.
Yeah, so obviously that is the word he's saying, but it's supposed to sound like the C-bomb, although I've just said cunt, so it's fine.
I've got a shit table.
We actually do have a bit of a shit table. It's quite wobbly. So there was a discussion about how he should pronounce it to make it a bit more forced on vowels or not.
It's a shame it's probably not mentioned in the commentary. I would love to know how the discussions went about to what extent can they get away with that in the show. Do you think this episode was rated, let me check, it was rated 15, but do you think that that is that's on the assumption that he's saying the C word, or do you think he is saying the C word?
No, but he's not saying the C word.
He is saying can't.
Yeah, so that's so, it. So the, right. their defense
if you want to infer
that,
from that that he's not saying can't, that's fine, but he is saying can't.
Yeah, because that's what's in the script, so
yeah.
that's
sure, but okay, but I could write in a script can't and then actually say it.
But can't is on,
gonna,
they say
you're
can't
not
on any show, so
yeah,
it's fine.
I just think there's a point where it doesn't matter what you put in the script, what you hear is what it is.
Oh, Adam, well, stop being a can't.
Yes. I'm just curious, you know, how that conversation sounds. Yeah.
Let it go, man. one of my favourite bits in this scene is because it actually seems to come off as quite a subtle joke in terms of it doesn't get a big audience reaction, but when Alan calls out Lynn and then you go, oh, you're there.
I love that bit so much.
Yeah. But it does seem to be that's such a subtle joke in terms of everything else that's happening in this scene. But I think it's great.
Yeah, agreed.
The scene where he's ordering the pyro is great. Sonia's customised lampshade and milk jug are behind him. That's Sonia's gift to this scene. It sounds, what I like is, I only just got this joke rewatching it. It sounds like he's ordering it direct from the company.
Yeah.
But he's in fact just getting Lynn's.
That's
Lynn's
the joke.
That's the joke.
That is 100% what that joke is.
Yeah,
and it's brilliant.
Yeah, you assume
what he wants is 4 glitter explosions, 12 puff flashes, so the sequence should be puff, flash, bang. Basically, can he have a condensed Pink Floyd concert for £500? Thanks, Lynn.
Thanks, Lynn.
Do you reckon we could get a condensed Pink Floyd concert for £500?
Well, we know for a fact that he doesn't get it, because later on you find out how much it really cost him in the end. Sonia says, Ellen, I love you.
He replies, thanks a lot.
Which is an exchange that me and my fiancé use quite a lot in the house.
So to confirm, she is definitely your fiancé now.
Now, when this goes out, maybe
probably
not.
We then move on to Alan and Michael's chat. I mean, having said that the earlier bits of this episode were quite slapstick and the series as a whole was quite light, this bit's quite bleak.
Well, the first thing I wanted to say here is you see Alan walk into the room where Michael's sleeping and Michael has only been offered a chair to sleep in. There's no bed. It's like you can have this deck chair, which looks painfully uncomfortable.
He's got a deck chair with a sleeping bag.
Yeah, it looks so uncomfortable.
But I have questions about this. So Michael is sleeping at Alan's house. Is that a regular arrangement?
It's because,
or is that just because he's been helping
stolen.
For the meeting?
No, it's because of the door.
It's because of the door, okay. Which allegedly has been stolen, but I suspect Michael has smashed down.
Do you think Michael kicked it in himself?
Yeah, or one of his mates did it or something.
One of his big, burly biker mates. Yeah.
Quite a few good moments in this. Alan talking about the world's getting smaller, and Michael saying, yeah, that's global warming. and then you get into the sort of fantasies, particularly Michael's helicopter fantasy, which gets a round of applause at the end because it is very long and hilarious.
This is one of my favourite moments of this series and is Michael's like sort of crowning glory.
Just the payoff
series.
Is like, yeah. No, he's just a mate.
Just a mate.
Oh, yeah. Tom Donaldson, just
I
a mate.
I think he's going to be some kind of arch nemesis from his school
days
or
the
something.
The bit that gets the biggest laugh from me, he goes just crashing to the scene, a big ball of flames.
Yeah. I love that he chose Cornwall as well. Yeah, Why has he picked... Yeah. He could go... You know, this is a fantasy. He could go anywhere. That's the most exotic place you could think of to crash.
Hello, you bastard.
Yeah, so good.
Did anybody notice that Michael's tattoos on his arms are totally different to their tattoos in Series 1?
Yes, I did mention it in Series 1 as well.
Yep. They are not the same.
I don't think Armando Nietzsche actually noticed that until he was recording the commentary for Series 1, because that's where I heard him say it.
You have these moments where you've got Alan and Michael talking. There's always this kind of that just lurking sense of depression around.
Well, Michael's clearly troubled, isn't
he? Yeah, well, him saying, you know, he says, keep the demons at bay. Yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of the episode in Series 1 where he's just kind of hanging around the hotel with nothing to do. And again, there's that kind of, they're talking about suicide and stuff like that. It always seems to be him and Michael are the... When they have those talks together, it always gets quite dark
Alan
and depressing.
Plus Michael equals
depression. He's walking around the car park like, rubbing his head, looking a bit pained.
I think this is the series' first full round of applause as well. I don't think there's anything.
I think that's right.
It's deserved as well.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's great.
So Michael now has Alan's chorister's card, which is going to cause Alan no end of problems as they now
because he went
let him
and
in.
Bloody left it in his hand.
Peter Bainham is the voice of the security guard for this bit.
But who's the voice of the female on the intercom.
I don't know.
It is Felicity Montague, it's Lynn. What they've done there is they've saved on costs and employing other people to do the voices.
Alan's at this point he's saying, hello, I've just swallowed a lot of anthrax and I'd like to let off like mad in the club.
Is that how it works? Do you fart anthrax out?
I don't know.
Good way of deploying.
So they won't let him in. He tries to climb up. Lynn arrives and then
impales
his foot on a spike. That spike shot is brief, unbelievably graphic.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that in this in a comedy like this.
And that is one of those shots again where all of a sudden you have quite shaky camera work, like it's documentary.
Yeah,
but it's just that bit.
Yeah. Frighteningly
real. Although I think that works because it's so short, so it does leave a very graphic imprint in the mind.
And before he kind of puts his foot on the spike, he's about to get really angry with Lynn because she suggested that he's nearly 50.
Oh, so there we go. As we were discussing about ages of Alan and Lynn last week, so does that mean if he's nearly 50...
But she was 50.
I'm going to say Lynn is 6 years older than him.
So what?
So I'm not sure that works from a babysitting point of view, does it?
Unless she was six when she was babysitting him.
I think
that works.
If you were 9 and they were 15, that's acceptable babysitting.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I suppose it could work.
I guess it depends when she was babysitting. Yeah. But yeah, I'm taking away from that he's 49 and she's 55.
Lynn takes charge at this point. She's genuinely distressed for Alan. You can see there's real concern on her face.
I love it when she says, take your foot off the spike. You take your foot off the spike.
Yeah, he's delirious.
In research for this, I found a brilliant tattoo that someone's got.
Yes, I want to talk about this. So I think, and I probably should have fact checked this before I said, I'm just going to say, did Frank Carter do that tattoo on someone?
That's a good point.
Frank Carter, for listeners who don't know
of
who that is.
Gallows and Frank Carter and Rattlesnakes.
Yep, rock man.
He's a punk rock
that
man.
That rings a bell.
And a tattoo artist, obviously.
Basically, we haven't really explained what we're talking about either. We will post this on our socials, but somebody got a quite large tattoo, I think, on their bum cheek that has a foot with a spike through it, and then the slogan says, Lynn, I've pierced my foot on a spike going across it.
Also, the word spike has three eyes in this tattoo. Accurate.
And just on Partridge Tattoos, we were sent via Twitter a while ago a picture of a tattoo of a monkey playing tennis. It says monkey tennis underneath it. And we've also had a tweet saying that somebody has a cup of beans tattoo. So I have tweeted them back asking for us to send us a picture, but we're yet to receive that.
For some reason, they don't want to...
It's ignoring our tweets. Unbelievable.
Lynn suggests that Alan ought to be going to hospital, but he refuses because, and I quote, some of these people have come from Stoke.
That's the point at which you can't abandon an event if people have travelled that far.
Presuming Coristers is in the Norwich area, Stoke is a 3-hour and 13-minute drive.
That's a long way. Fair. It's a long drive.
Also, when you cut to inside, there are 27 people visible in the audience. Those are the people that are preventing Alan from getting hospital treatment. I like the fact that he opens with puns, even though there's a very heated exchange earlier where he's begged and told not to open with a few jokes.
They don't want a clown. And he comes onto the heat is on.
One thing that's possibly a continuity or technical error, his face is being projected onto a screen behind him, but it's filmed from two different angles, but there's no camera.
I noticed this from the commentary, and once you've noticed it, you can't unnotice it. There is a cameraman on stage to begin with, and after the first couple of shots, he just disappears. It is a continuity error, yeah.
Okay.
But that's where it's coming from.
Alan, like in series one, loves a goodie bag. There's a goodie bag here.
So can I just make a quick point before you go into the fun packs?
Continue.
Assuming that he hadn't put his foot on a spike and he was able to give his A game, would the jokes have been funny and been met with any laughter, or would they have been met with zero laughter as they are in this scene?
I think ripples of laughter rather than shrieks of concern.
kind of titters, probably. He's done some puns.
At best.
But I would say that the whole speech he does in this scene is probably one of my favourite Partridge moments. Just everything about this is just absolute Partridge gold.
The only thing I would say is that the whole throwing up thing does kind of outstay its welcome a little bit.
You say that. I was watching this with my dad on the weekend. He would not stop laughing during that. Yeah. He absolutely loved it.
Okay, so we found the audience.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it stands up. It's very funny. Maybe the point that he does it a lot, that is kind of, it should go too far, but maybe... just the right amount that it becomes funny again. It goes full circle.
Maybe I've just seen it too many times.
What's the best and worst thing in the fun pack?
Good question.
There's a torch, a curly-whirly, a book of stamps, a free digital watch, a vodka miniature, a Bic-style razor, and a copy of the Daily Express.
Daily Express.
Daily Express is the worst.
Hold on a minute, though, Adam. That free digital watch has a denim strap. You missed out a very, okay, very important the detail there.
A denim strap.
Certainly an upgrade from the goodie bags he gave when he left the travel tavern, which had 50 pence piece and shower caps. And
wonder if you can get a denim strap for an Apple Watch.
Producer Jed?
I'm sure Bon Jovi's got
He's
one.
He's nodding. Yeah. His dry heaving noise is possibly even better than his imitation car crash noise. And also, part of his speech is, August bucked the trend for a downturn in fire sales. Well, obviously, it's the end of summer.
I'd never thought about that. That's great.
He ended up spending £2,000 on pyro. We heard him earlier thinking he was going to get it for 500 quid.
So Lynn didn't do a good deal for him there, did she? She's overspent.
Did we establish what his fee is for this? Was it ever mentioned?
Is he making
money? No, I don't think it is. Is it? Is he
just
making
he just
money
says,
on this?
"I've come into a rather substantial amount of money." Lynn doesn't strike me as a very shrewd negotiator either. No. I wouldn't trust her to
bargain. £2,000. Okay, then.
Fine. Well, she's earning £8,000 a year.
Exactly. Yep. And then he instructs everyone to go and eat some coffee, drink it, soup you can eat.
Lots of liquid.
A lovely little detail, when he sets off the second pyrotechnic bag, the genuine jumps of the people in the crowd is brilliant. Yeah. They properly jump.
It's a very loud bag. I think as well, watching this back, the glitter keeps on falling for ages.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's a bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
Did anybody notice as well, there is some music when he walks off, or kind of when his speech finishes. And it's basically a very poor imitation version of Prodigy the Fire. Yeah. I mean, it's very short, but you can tell that's what it's supposed to be.
Brilliant.
Great details.
Yeah.
So we're almost at the end of the episode. Yeah. It's Michael's touching attempt to cheer Alan up. It's actually quite sweet.
He's morphine boozed at this point.
although Michael does say, I'm not going to do it in the accent, Apache Productions is probably going to go doon the pan, like all the other companies you've started.
Yep.
So again, like, Michael keeps on putting him down, but he doesn't notice.
This last sequence almost feels like it's improv based to me.
Yeah.
It's quite loose but funny.
It may very, very well be.
And Michael's created a helicopter landing pad to cheer Alan up, but used a lowercase h.
Now, I did think this scene, I always felt it was a bit of a poor end to what I thought was a really good episode, because it feels like all the helicopter chat and stuff just felt a bit incongruous and a bit out of nowhere.
Oh, I quite like it.
Yeah, I think it's good.
Yeah, I quite like it.
Well, fine to have different opinions. But apparently, I think this might explain why it does feel a bit like a bolt-on. There was a plotline about Alan wanting a helicopter that was cut, so that's probably why it's in there. So I think there would have been more conversation with Alan and Michael about wanting an Apache.
And that also explains why it's Apache Communications.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we get onto it at some other point, but I found a list somewhere of other companies he'd founded in between the first series and this one, and one of them is named after a helicopter as well.
Oh, yeah. There's a list of all the there's a list of all the companies that Alan sets up
in the
audio book. It's in the audio book.
And with the tax people.
Oh, that's right.
There's six companies that he creates.
We'll get to that in the next episode.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
We'll come to that.
So before we go, it's time for another round of Cards Against Alanity, the Cards Against Humanity themed quiz, where we take phrases from this series of I'm Alan Partridge and a sentence from this episode. Everybody around the table here has to complete the sentence as best they can with the cards that they've got in front of them, and Jed will ping his bell for the best one. That's what it sounds like. So the sentence you have to complete this time is, I've just swallowed a load of blank and I'd like to let off like mad in the club bar. Okay, I've handed my submission in to Jed.
Can you read it again, please? Sorry.
Yes, I can. I've just swallowed a load of blank and I'd like to let off like mad in the club bar.
It's very tense.
Tom Dark.
So I won last week, so I'm one up.
Okay. Are they all in?
Putting an end to Nick's reign of terror from last season.
Okay, let's see who's got the best one. I just swallowed a lot of the worth of boast worlds, and I'd like to let off like mad in the club bar. I've just swallowed a lot of againsters from the fridge, and I'd like to let off it like mad in the club bar. I've just swallowed a lot of American things, and I'd like to let off it like mad in the club bar.
Yes!
Tom Dark's won it again. To finish the round, I've just swallowed a lot of bitter bastards, and I'd like to let off like mad in the club bar. So Tom Dark is 2-2. He can still be beaten, though. We'll play Cards Against Alanity next time. That pretty much wraps it up for this episode. Thanks so much for listening to Monkey Tennis and for subscribing. If you have, you can catch us online on Twitter. We're at ThePartridgePod. Email thepartridgepod@gmail.com or facebook.com/ThePartridgePod. From all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. Goodbye, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
See ya.
Back of the net.
Hello everyone, this is Nick from Monkey Tennis, the host that was recently voted the best person that could draw a chalk penis on the back of a t-shirt. And if you've got no idea what I'm talking about, just head over to our Twitter page at The Partridge Pod and find out what it's all about. But I really, really can draw the best chalk penis on the back of a t-shirt. It's just a quick message to say, if you're enjoying the episodes and the series so far, please do rate and review on iTunes. It makes a big, big difference and we really appreciate it. So thanks for taking the time to do that. Lovely stuff.
Monkey Tennis is a post-pop podcast produced by Jed Shepherd. The artwork's by Dave McNamara, and the theme is an excerpt of the Black Beauty theme, Galloping Home, by Dennis King. To find out more about the records and podcasts made by Post-Pop, head to postpoprecords.com.
Monkey Tennis.
Damn!
Monkey Tennis.
Little piece my foot of a spy.
Monkey Tennis.
Go to London, I guarantee you'll either be mugged or not appreciated.
Monkey Tennis.
Damn!
Monkey Tennis. On the whole, a very good effort, 7-10.
It's hotter than the sun.
Back of the net. Monkey Tennis.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.